It's a start.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke, in for Scott Jagow. President-elect Obama's proposed stimulus package got a vote of confidence this morning. Speaking at the London School of Economics, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke talked for the first time about the roughly $800 billion recovery plan. As Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson tells us, Bernanke said Obama's plan will help, but it's not enough by itself.
The Fed chairman said the new administration's stimulus package could help the economy recover, but he said further government action will be needed to stabilize the banking system.
History demonstrates conclusively that a modern economy cannot grow if its financial system is not operating effectively.
Bernanke ticked through all the extraordinary measures the central bank has taken to address the global financial meltdown and said more capital injections into financial institutions may be necessary. He noted that despite all the money the Fed and the Treasury have pumped into the economy in recent months, inflation is not a concern.
At this point, with global economic activity weak and commodity prices at low levels, we see little risk of inflation in the near term.
The Federal Reserve has run out of room to lower interest rates further to spur the economy, but Bernanke said other options remain, including the possibility of the Fed purchasing longer-term Treasury securities. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
One thing I'll say about monstrous recessions, they do help the old trade deficit. America's trade imbalance plunged to its lowest level in 5 years in November, that report out this morning. We're just not buying as much from other countries, particularly when it comes to oil, which is now down around $38 a barrel. Don't expect stock investors to cheer too much. They are focused on corporate earnings. Aluminum maker Alcoa reported a quarterly loss of more than $1 billion. Others will weigh in this week. Investors are nervous. So far, though, the Dow is up for a change this morning, around 20 points, a quarter percent. S&P 500 up a percent or so, and the NASDAQ up about 0.4%. Asian markets were way down today after reports that Sony will show a loss for the year. Major European markets are down about 2%. There are reports that Citigroup and Morgan Stanley could announce a deal this afternoon to combine their brokerage operations as Citi struggles to raise cash. This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, January 13th at Marketplace.org. The World Economic Forum is counting down to its annual gathering in Davos, Switzerland in a couple of weeks, and its advanced report on the economic picture for 2009, well, no surprise here. From London, Stephen Beard reports it warns of some potentially devastating unknowns.
Widening budget deficits, a further collapse in property prices, and a big rise in unemployment. The World Economic Forum says that's what we can look forward to this year. One major concern is China. The forum says China could suffer a hard landing in 2009. The country could be forced to spend its huge reserves at home to create more jobs. Economist Andrew Hilton says that could be bad for the rest of us. Most Western countries, and especially the US, need to borrow a lot more money this year.
The US government intends to sell $2 trillion worth of government paper in 2009. Somebody's going to have to buy that. And we've counted on the Chinese to buy Western government paper. If it doesn't, we're in trouble.
The forum also warns of the cost of climate change, forecasting food shortages due to drought and flooding. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
A report out today from the National Small Business Association concludes it's not much better for the little guys either. From the entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
Half of those surveyed expect their sales to deteriorate this year. Those planning to cut jobs outnumber those planning to add them by a third. Most say credit conditions are getting worse. Still, there's something surprising buried here, inveterate tenacious optimism. Todd McCracken is the association's president.
There's always been a strikingly more optimistic outlook on the part of small business owners about their own business than about the economy overall.
So while just 3% think the U.S. economy will grow this year, nearly two-thirds are still confident about their own company's prospects. Is this just the irrational exuberance of entrepreneurs? Not exactly, says McCracken.
Fundamentally, they're more resilient because they have a great ability to be flexible, and they're more responsive to the marketplace as they see it.
McCracken says they may be quicker to shed employees to stay afloat, but also be quicker to hire back up when their business starts to turn around. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Tough times are forcing many of us to make changes in our lifestyle, maybe eating out less, shopping less, just generally cutting back. A few years ago, commentator Joe Bevilacqua lost his job and made some drastic changes to his lifestyle. Now, he says, it's second nature.
A good life is one that evolves slowly. Patience is the difficult part. I grew up in New York and until 7 years ago lived only in cities. Food came from the grocery store. Heat, water, electricity came from utility companies. I never thought about the true cost of such convenience. The word sustainability was something environmental nuts talked about. Things changed when I met my wife. She was a vegetarian, and I became one too, just to please her. But as we learned more about the health and environmental benefits, sustainability began to make sense to me. When I lost my high-tech job and cashed out with six figures, we bought a small 60-year-old house in the Catskills. We started gardening, composting, and doing about 50 other things. The learning curve was high. A garden does not grow overnight. But within 2 years, we were dicing up 2-foot-long zucchinis from our garden. Large south-facing windows greatly reduced our heating costs. We spent a lot less money and felt more connected to nature. Over the years, we've lost other jobs, and the six figures have dwindled to a near-zero bank balance. Today, we both work but can't go on vacation and have no health insurance, yet are surviving pretty well. Our patience has paid off. We know how to live well with only what we need. Not as a panicked reaction to the current economic crisis, but as a personal choice. Someday, we may again have six figures in the bank, but as for our lifestyle, we wouldn't change a thing.
Joe Bevilacqua lives in the Catskills region of New York, and he's a freelance writer. Cell phones used to be annoying because of the loud talking. Now that our phones are also calendars and music players, web surfers and shopping portals, they might present a new problem. Today, two consumer advocacy groups are petitioning the Federal Trade Commission to investigate the mobile industry for allegedly going too far. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
The Center for Digital Democracy and the U.S. Public Interest Research Group are asking the FTC to investigate how mobile devices can mine data from users. The Center for Digital Democracy's Jeff Chester says smartphones have gotten a little too smart.
We don't think consumers understand that the mobile device they're carrying, in fact, has been designed to be this kind of commercial surveillance tool.
Chester says right now, marketers can see everything you do on your phone, from buying shoes to banking. They can even find out where you are at any given moment. Yankee Group media analyst Daniel Taylor says that is a lot of information, but marketers can already get most of it from your computer, and mobile advertising has some real limits.
The screen is small, and most publishers have decided that they're really only going to be able to deliver one ad per mobile web page.
Still, Taylor says, while most parts of the advertising industry are expected to contract over the next few years, he expects mobile advertising to grow about 9%. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
President-elect Obama will be on Capitol Hill today asking Congress to release the other half of that $700 billion bailout package. He does have other expenses to worry about. He's got to pay for his inauguration festivities. Obama's inaugural committee has refused to take money from corporations or registered lobbyists. So how will it pay for everything? Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer takes a look.
President-elect Obama had some strong words about lobbyists during his campaign.
They will not run my White House. You'll help me run my White House. They will not drown out the voices of the American people when I'm president.
Now Obama is trying to live up to that promise. Inaugural fundraising is unregulated. Still, Obama has banned contributions from registered lobbyists, political action committees, corporations, and foreigners. Contributions from individuals are limited to $50,000. But the rules can be bent.
You could drive a Mack truck through the loophole on lobbyists.
Sheila Krumholtz heads the Center for Responsive Politics. She says lobbyists who haven't registered with the federal government can still contribute to the inauguration. And registered lobbyists can get around the rules, too.
Spouses of registered lobbyists can give. Spouses, children. It's a pro-family system.
Wealthy individuals can use their families to double their donations. A couple can give Obama $100,000. That's a lot more than the $4,600 limit for individual donations to the campaign. Still, inaugural committee spokeswoman Linda Douglas defends the Obama team's efforts.
There are the strongest restrictions to try to reduce the influence of special interests that we've ever seen.
Well, not quite.
Ladies and gentlemen, the president-elect William Jefferson Clinton.
According to Public Citizen, President Clinton banned corporate donations for his second inauguration. He limited individual donations to $100. Of course, Clinton could afford that because he had a surplus from his first inaugural, thanks to corporate donations. Obama also has a surplus from his campaign, but he'd prefer not to use that money for the inaugural. The inaugural committee has raised about $27 million so far, just over half what it needs. Douglas says the committee is also selling Obama memorabilia on its website and should meet its target. It recently encouraged the less well-heeled to pony up. If they gave $5, they were eligible for one of 10 free tickets for the swearing-in. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for joining us.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.